Buddy, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at acsmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Tuesday, November 3rd. Kind of a lot going on in the country, but we're going to obviously talk about the single most important thing that happened or is happening or has maybe ever happened. And that is Michigan State's win over Michigan this past weekend. John, the biggest thing that's happened in your life in some time, I imagine. Tell me how your weekend was.
Okay, so I had a baby this weekend, and that was pretty wild. And for what
thanks
it's
for
worth,
the heads up, man.
Yeah, no problem. I just texted Austin on the low, and I was like, hey, man, can you record the game Saturday? Because I'm going to have a baby, I think. I just felt like doing it. Just, you know, just kind of wanted
to be having a kid.
Just wanted to do it. And, yeah, you know, just sort of went for it. Full send. And here we are. So, yeah, they let you have a baby and go home with it and everything. So just to, anyone can do it. It's kind of wild. You don't have to take a test or anything, which is just kind of astonishing. So we did that. And I got to tell you, the Michigan State Spartans went from week one losing to Rutgers. I had a baby. Week two, Michigan State beats Michigan at Michigan. So you tell me, there was one variable change that I know of between week one and week two. So good things coming. I don't see a reason. I mean, maybe I have to have a baby every week. I don't know if that's what has to happen here.
Listen, if those are the rules, those are the rules. I think we've both been very clear over the years. We do not make them. If they are what they are, we take them. I think the biggest question everybody wants to know is, are you changing or have you changed yet your child's legal name to Ricky White?
Well, yeah. So as soon as you fill out the form and you walk out of that hospital, one, you can't go back in for COVID reasons. So I tried. I was like, I think we got to, you know, consider changing it to Ricky. And my wife, apparently, you know, weirdly wasn't for it. But regardless, you know, the attempt was made. And, you know, I guess like we were talking, you know, maybe kid number two could be Ricky, could be Cassius, Rocket. There are a lot of options out there, I'll be honest. So, but yes, if you're having a baby in the near future and you are a Spartan fan, you might consider Ricky White. You might consider Antoine Simmons. You might consider Connor Hayward. A lot of great names to consider.
Don't you dare tempt me.
Austin, you're on the shot clock maybe with, and so, you know, those names are for the taking. You heard me laugh at the beginning of this podcast. Like, I don't know why that happened. Like, it was spontaneous and that you were just saying, like, Michigan State beat Michigan. It might be because I'm a little, like, kooky tired. That's just so effing funny to me. Like, fucking hilarious.
I mean, yeah. Let's dive right in. Like, how? Let's dive right in. I think both you and I were sitting here. Like, I had a friend of mine that went to U of M and is usually a fairly pragmatic individual. He texts me and he's like, you know, no BS. Like, you know, what's a win? Like, what's your prediction this weekend? And I said, honestly, if you guys win by saying Michigan, if you win by less than 21, I'm coming away feeling okay. Like, assuming there would have been some things to, you know, improved upon, not as many turnovers, some form of growth, I would have come away marginally satisfied. I mean, you can only set your expectations so high against, you know, against a quality foe in Michigan, which no matter what the outcome of this past weekend's game, that's a quality foe, no matter what. I mean, it's at the very least a very talented team. Like, I would have come out just looking for signs of progress. Instead, I'm coming out thinking, you know, Michigan State should be 2-0. We should be sitting here looking to go 3-0. All of a sudden, Mel Tucker, all of the hope and optimism and everything that he sold and then, like, promptly flushed down the toilet after week one is really all back and honestly, and then some. I got to give credit. I mean, let's just kind of dive into the good, the bad, and the weird here. Like,
Austin, are you and I both love the movie Dumb and Dumber. This is
obviously we landed on the moon.
You go out and do something so stupid and lose to Rutgers and then come back and totally redeem yourself.
Yeah. Like, it's quintessential that. Like, it's wild how fast, like, the things have turned. And I really do think, first and foremost, like, I think there's a lot of praise to go around. But I think the coaches deserve more praise than anybody going in, coming out of this one. I think the ability to keep a room of guys focused. I mean, listen, there's no shortage of motivation when Michigan comes to town, but this isn't like it's Mark D'Antonio. Like, this is a new group of coaches. Yeah, they have some history with the rivalry, but we're not talking about guys that are, long time Big Ten coaches or really have a tremendous amount of experience with this particular rivalry. And yet you would have thought that they've been around forever, the way Mel Tucker was fired up before the game, and just the sheer level of confidence and quality of the game plan and all of these things together made it truly one of certainly, if not the most, maybe not the most surprising, one of the more surprising victories that I can remember in my time as a Michigan State fan. I was truly shocked at the end of that game. Shocked as I was watching.
I mean, what a turnaround.
Credit to those coaches.
Yeah, what a turnaround. And so now begs the question, all of the warts that you saw in week one versus, it wasn't a complete game in week two and Michigan State still won. Like, Michigan State did not play a perfect game. They played a good game.
By no stretch, but they played the game you expected Michigan to play, to be honest. They played the game that, and we talked about it before, that what I had perceived to be one of the real advantages Michigan had going into this one was just that they had a system. They had experience at every level of the field. I mean, a lot of new faces, don't get me wrong, but like, you have guys that have been in a program hearing one message from one set of coaches for multiple years. MSU is nothing resembling that right now. I thought that alone, plus, listen, no fans in the stands, that's still a home game. I mean, all of those things should have, honestly, I thought led to a large advantage for U of M. And instead, MSU came out and played the game that I expected to see from U of M. Confident, under control, not forcing anything, really, honestly, kind of dictating the pace of the entire game, looking like the more prepared team. And it was just surprising. So huge credit to Mel Tucker, huge credit to Scotty Hazleton, I thought put on a great defensive performance. I have my issues with some of the things Jay Johnson did, but honestly, credit to him for seeing the fact that these receivers were not getting covered deep, not able to be covered deep, and still and trusting Rocky to throw that ball up there, sticking with the run so that the play action would work, and dialing up some really good clutch situation calls, like the screen pass to Connor Hayward there at the end of the game for the last touchdown. I think you start there and kind of, work your way down when it starts with congratulations. Who or really credit? Who jumped off the page at you as a standout performer?
So it goes without saying that Ricky White turned in the single best performance in this rivalry that we've seen, man, in at least the D'Antonio era.
Well, second most receiving yards against U of M ever for an individual behind Plaxico Burress.
He's 18. And a kid that got a little run against Rutgers, but frankly was, I don't want to say lost, just was a freshman. He was fine. He was fine. That's what you expect. And he just came out and he did something that you only see in high school. And when I say that, I mean, I went and saw a long time ago, I saw Charles Rogers play when I was really little in the Silverdome in the state championship game. Saginaw High did not have an offense beyond throw it up. Just toss it up to the best player, okay? Go routes to Chuck. Now, I'm not demeaning Ricky White's performance and saying that's what happened. What I'm making the connection is Michigan State employed exactly what Michigan gave them and ran a high school-esque offense because Michigan was too stubborn, stupid. I don't know why, just unwilling to provide any type of safety help. And Michigan State just simply said, you know what? Let's keep giving it to the best athlete we have on the field. That seems like a good play. And just let him go get it because he is zoning right now. And Michigan's corners, they don't even want to play. This is embarrassing. Like, getting double moved off the field, it was an incredible performance by Ricky White. It was an incredible adjustment in the first quarter by not just Jay Johnson, but Rocky Lombardi, who by himself beat Michigan on a few different up-tempo plays. Plays where in the past, Michigan State rarely pushing tempo outside of time-related, you know, two-minute drill type situations. Rocky had the presence of mind, despite having any real big-time game experience or big-time plays made in games to this date, to not celebrate those big plays. Getting everyone to the line and hitting them with quick hitters and keeping them on the backs of their feet. And I mean, I'm gushing right now because you had a freshman simply show up and just out-athlete Michigan. A no-star kid. Everyone wants to talk about Michigan and their recruiting. A no-star, you know, kid that went to transfer to get some exposure in Marietta, Georgia. Power five offer outside of Michigan State, and he just exposed Michigan football.
So I think Ricky White was a 3 or 4 star. For Ricky White, I remember, I think one of the things we deserve a little credit for, not to pat ourselves on the back, but we absolutely will, is that I remember he was one of the guys that jumped off the page at me that I was really excited about coming to Michigan State. Didn't necessarily know if he'd make a huge initial impact just because of the talent in that locker room, but he obviously has more than enough talent to make a difference right away. I think the fact that he was prepared, and it's not just that he was catching those bombs. I mean, he caught a couple routes over the middle. He caught a stop route. I mean, he really turned in, again, it speaks to the level of comfortability and coaching and that kind of neutral mentality that Mel Tucker has talked about quite a bit in his early on in his tenure here. I was just very impressed with that. And again, credit to the coaching staff. Again, I was so impressed with the use of tempo. I mean, it's the stuff that it felt like MSU fans have been begging the D'Antonio regime to do. It seemed like they finally did. Screen passes. The only screen pass I remember in Mark D'Antonio's entire history is the screen pass to Madre London in Ann Arbor, very similar to the one that Connor Hayward just had, that ended up in a touchdown and ended up in Michigan State winning the game. I think they completed more screen passes for successfully in this game than they did in the 10-plus years of D'Antonio. That tempo adjusting, I mean, it really was impressive. And now when you get down to the actual players, again, Ricky White, Rocky Lombardi jumping off the page, my boy Connor Hayward made a couple real big plays. He's not a pure running back. We've been very open and honest about that. But what he can do and what the staff has found a way to get him to do is impressive. They found a way to use him correctly. And I love that he's the one out getting the chance to go out there and make plays, especially after his, you know, entire saga. It's a beautiful thing. But I think even more than him on the offensive side, that offensive line deserves a lot of credit. And so does the offensive line coach, Chris Kapilovic. The turnaround from week one to week two is very impressive. Again, I said Michigan deserves credit for being talented. Jim Harbaugh recruits talented players, no question. And typically that shows up in their front seven. I mean, they've got guys in Aiden Hutchinson, Quiddy Pay, Cam McGrone. You're talking about three dudes that could be top, I don't know, at worst third round draft picks. I mean, we're talking about Quiddy Pay and Hutchinson are easily top 30 to 35 picks in next year's draft. And aside from one play, you didn't hear from either of them. And it's not like you're going up against these five-star linemen. I mean, Blake Buehler was playing. Nick Samick started over Matt Allen, who we thought was one of the only surefire things in there. Kevin Jarvis starting at a tackle position where he should not be playing. On a good offensive line, Kevin Jarvis is the guard. And yet, they played a very, very solid game. Really kept Lombardi clean. He didn't get sacked one time. I mean, I was expecting him to get sacked dozens of times in this game. So huge credit, huge, huge credit to them. And then defensively, I thought MSU was going to get torched on the lines, both sides of the ball. Instead, the defensive line, I thought, did a very good job of keeping Joe Milton moving around. I mean, he made some plays with his legs. He made a couple, you know, nice adjusting throws as well. But he never hit him deep. He never scrambled for anything too big. I mean, it was genuinely an impressive performance from that defense. Antoine Simmons, I mean, the play that he made in against Hassan Haskins in the to tip his, you know, attempted touchdown pass out of the Wildcat, I thought was remarkable. I mean, that's just a team that wants it. That's just a guy that absolutely, like, needs to have it. And I thought that you saw, once again, you kind of zoom out and go beyond just the individual players. I mean, I think in Michigan State, you saw a team that wanted to be there, a team that takes that game seriously, a team that doesn't overlook things out of hand. And I think, you know, that kind of reared its ugly head for Michigan yet again. And it seems to cost them all the time. And you always wonder, will this ever change? And I think the answer is pretty clearly no.
Yeah, you're right. It was from the jump. One team wanted to be there. One team wasn't afraid to take a punch in the mouth, and one team got shook when they got hit. That's a sign of a soft program. Michigan State got punched in the mouth in week one, and they got up, and they kicked ass. Michigan read everything that everyone ever had to say about them after week one, because that's what they do. That's the type of program they are. That's the type of people that they are. They love to hear how great they are. They love to hear their own fans tell them how great they are. That's what they do. And then when they get punched in the mouth, they're not sure how to handle it. Ricky White was the best recruit in our class last year. He would have been the 17th best recruit in Michigan's class last year. I don't want to hear about recruiting one more damn time. I don't want to hear about it. Show up on game day. It's what you do with the time you have, okay? And I'm tired. It's just so hilarious that this program continues to act so smug. All of them. The entire program, the coaches, the athletic department, the fan base, and with no reason. None. They get punched in the mouth. They are the epitome of a white-collar program. They expect things to just go their way. And a bunch of really plucky kids who had no reason to do what they did based on what had been seen to date, focused in on themselves, cleaned it up, and to your point, hats off to this coaching staff, because it is so damn easy to just say, yeah, you know what, let's just put an asterisk on it. Let's just, hey, you know, let's just not lose by 20. You know, all the things right. That we were saying. They didn't do that. They said, we can compete. We can win if we play our game. And as we talked about, they didn't play a perfect game. And they still beat that ass.
I think it was funny that, you know, it's so easy from a fan perspective to hear these guys come out and say, you know, we really didn't play that bad. Like, turnovers aside, they didn't play that bad against Rutgers. And then you're like, okay, but there were 7 turnovers. So, like, can we really play that game? Turns out they might not have been wrong. Because, you know, you don't just come out and beat Michigan and not be a good football team. And listen, Michigan, again, I think that the shine of the Minnesota win is wearing off a little bit, and which we'll talk about. And who knows how they'll go out and play against Indiana. But the fact of the matter is, that's a team that on paper should not be really – they shouldn't be that close to the game. And yet, MSU came prepared to play. They look better. They look more competitive. They look better coached. And I just – as we kind of zoom out now and talk about, you know, what are the – long medium term consequences of this game let's start with Michigan, because I want to stop talking about them, but from their perspective, from that fan base's perspective, I mean, you're in year 6 of the Harbaugh regime. Excuses don't exist anymore. I mean, we've been hearing for how long, once he gets his players, once he does this, once he does that, then you know, it's always the next thing that's going to make him so great and bring them back to, you know, quote unquote glory. And every year there's something that keeps that from happening. And just like, you know, we've got Cam Newton mixed with every other great quarterback that's ever played in the NFL suiting up for Michigan. And yet they come out and they get outclassed by an inferior team and coming from an inferior situation. I mean, of all the situations, you should be beating this Michigan State team this year. This guy Mel Tucker didn't have a preseason. He had nothing, and yet he came out and put together a much better product on the field than your guy who's been there for so long and spent all this money to hire his people and to recruited his ass off and all of these things and finally got his guys and comes out flat like this. So at what point do these calls, which have not been non-existent thus far, but have certainly been limited, at what point do you just say enough is enough as a Michigan fan, swallow your pride and you know, move on? I think the answer is never, because swallowing pride is not an option. I said this when they hired him a long time ago, probably in one of these really old episodes of this podcast, that he was the nuclear option, because if it worked, it was going to work. It's just incredibly well. I mean, that's what it looked like was going to happen early on, you know, but now, I mean, what do you do? You're not the type of program to swallow your pride and fire somebody. It's not like a Bo Pelini thing. Like, you know, Nebraska hired him thinking, oh man, we got our big hot shot, and he came out and had a lot of success, but then they ultimately, for the worse, swallowed their pride and tried to move on. Now, I just don't know if Michigan has the ability to do that. Or if I wonder now if the whole, oh yeah, someone in the NFL is looking at him storyline starts to get a little bit louder as the season goes on. Because listen, I don't think this is going to be the last loss for U of M. I mean, they are immediately faced with a huge test in Indiana, who looks legit. They are now still having to play Ohio State and Penn State. And listen, no slight to Ricky White, but if Ricky White's going to tear your corners up, what are Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson going to do? What is that Penn State wide receiver number 5 who made some sick catches Sunday or Saturday night going to do? Like, it doesn't get easier from here for Michigan. So I don't know. I don't want to say this is the beginning of the end or make any type of grand assumption, but I think the questions are maybe at the loudest they've been so far. I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, Austin, you're right. And here's why the dam is breaking in Ann Arbor. Jim Harbaugh doesn't lose these games. Not Michigan State games. He's done that. He's pretty good at it. He doesn't lose games against inferior opponents. He's never done
correct.
It. He beats bad teams. He loses to good teams. If you start to lose to bad teams every once in a while, you have your games start to sprout up.
Mm-hmm.
There, things get sour quick, because Michigan's glory days, here's the secret no one will say out loud, ain't that good. 9-3.
Say it.
They let Lloyd Carr, they ran his ass out of town for going 9-3 every year.
Can't spell Lloyd without two L's, John.
Three. Should have been three. They ran his ass out of town for going 9-3 and splitting a natty. It doesn't get better for Jim Harbaugh. This is it. You are looking at the final product. You are looking at the ceiling. You are staring it in the face. And you know what? It's pretty good. Frankly, it's pretty good. There are 100 other football programs that want that. Maybe more. But this is it.
Oh, yeah.
This is it. And there is no other option. None. Because you are fighting every single battle coming into this program that others don't have to deal with. You have to recruit in the Midwest. Not fun. You have to work through the smug, old money athletic department that is stodgy. And they have short tempers. They are not ready to be patient. So you get to work through that. you have to work against Ohio State's current trajectory, which we said in the past, Urban Meyer held Ohio State back, and I stand by it. Because what we're looking at is a juggernaut unknown to the Big Ten, what is happening in Columbus, Ohio.
Correct.
And it's not stopping anytime soon. So this is it. This is the ceiling. The beautiful part for Michigan State, Austin, we don't know the ceiling. The ceiling is unknown. And we
start. The ceiling is the roof.
The ceiling is the roof, as Matt Michael Jordan once said. And, you know, the mystery and the unknown is half of the fun. But what we do know is that Mel Tucker currently, in a two-game sample size, is able to pick things up and get better game to game. And if they can continue to do that in year zero, we are going to be very excited in years to come, because he's doing this with a group of kids that are playing their absolute tails off and proud as hell for them. But I think we all know that there is opportunity to improve even at every level. And that's the exciting part for everybody.
Think about this. You hear so much about when Jim Harbaugh has his guys and all that stuff. You know, every single recruit on that team was – every single player on that team was recruited by Jim Harbaugh. How many players on Michigan State's current roster were recruited by this recruiting staff?
Zero.
Zero. Exactly zero. He's working with a team that he had no influence over the construction of, no time to evaluate in the spring, and basically no real practice whatsoever until the last, call it, 6 to 8 weeks. And you've still seen his ability as a coach and a delegator. And really, it speaks again to the quality of the staff that he hired. And I just think it's truly one of the more impressive wins. I think maybe the most impressive win that I can remember in my time at MSU from a coaching perspective, which is extremely, extremely high praise considering all of the success that MSU has had.
I agree. And I want to hit on that coaching thing before we start to talk about some of the fun, weird stuff and maybe repercussions. You saw two different men on those sidelines. Okay. You saw one guy who watched Matt Coughlin nail a 51-yarder, by the way. Shouts out to that.
Yeah,
huge.
Big shouts out.
Absolutely huge. And then you saw Matt come out and hook a 40-yarder. And you pan to the sideline, and what do you see? Mel Tucker running on the field, encouraging Matt Coughlin. We'll get it back. We'll get it back, right? And he did. On the other sideline, you see an absolutely unhinged dude who frankly, is tuned out, because when you're so insane, people just stop listening. And you see in the post-game presser start to blame outstanding factors like referees. If you can't hold yourself accountable, if you can't hold yourself accountable to things, how can you expect anybody to do the same? And someone once told me, you can have results or you can have excuses, but you can't have both. Well, Mel Tucker and that program, this entire program, played through their own sets of challenges, as we have laid out already. Mm-hmm. One had every advantage in the world and decided to focus on the negative that they didn't play through. They decided to focus on the excuses. That's the difference between those sidelines right now, and frankly has been. We just hadn't seen it yet. So it's all out on the table for both programs. Where they go from here? Can you pick yourself up if you're Michigan? How do you take this emotional win if you're Michigan State? Yet to be determined. But what we saw right there was a very damning moment for both of those men and programs in general. So, Austin, I'm going to hand it back to you because the emperor has no clothes. It has been exposed. Michigan is who we thought they were. To the nation, when I say we, they are exactly what they always seem to churn out, choking and tripping over themselves and blaming something else and saying next year's the year. Tale as old as time. So now we'll move on to some of the fun repercussions. but not before you let me know how you feel about Joel Klatt and the Fox Sports analysis of the game in its entirety.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder. I don't know how to say this like PG-13, but I think Joel Klatt should be kind of embarrassed. And I honestly think, like, I know I put this online too, but Gus Johnson, bless him, love him. He's incredibly fun to listen to. He's a horrible comment. He is the inability to put aside bias when it comes to calling a Michigan State game. And I'm not saying in like the, you know, he's out and out rooting for Michigan or anything like that. But this guy grew up a Michigan fan. Like he is vocal about his support of the Wolverines. Like this is something that he is open and honest about. And he clearly doesn't like Michigan State. Like the level of enthusiasm that he's putting towards these calls for Michigan versus Michigan State is kind of a joke. I mean, I think I really noticed it during the Holiday Bowl way back when. And like, listen, I get it. It's the Holiday Bowl. But like the dude sounded like he was asleep when he was calling the game. And ever since then, I've always kind of paid attention when we get a Gus Johnson game. And when whoever it is going against Michigan State, he's classic Gus losing his mind. And then it comes to Michigan State doing something. He's kind of like, and Sparty for six, like that, just the most bored, detached version of his really good professional demeanor. And, I thought he brought kind of that same lack of energy to the table on Saturday. And then Joel Klatt, I mean, like, you know, I just wonder if Harbaugh tucked him in at night afterwards or if he made him, you know, sleep in the car. I'm just not sure what happened there. It was a remarkable lack of bias. And I think the halftime show was even worse. I mean, Charles Woods, it was a 4 minute. I think Valeni described it as a 4 minute pep talk today. And like, couldn't put it any better. So, personally, I love it. I'm not going to get too bent out of shape about it because it's not new, really. Like, this is behavior that I'm, like, new. But, yeah, it was pretty embarrassing for Joel Klatt, to be honest with you, because it was just – it could not have been more obvious throughout the game. And he also – I thought the funny part was that he is also a Colorado alum.
Oh, yeah.
Which broke bus really did not help their image in that one either. So, yeah, I mean, it was kind of embarrassing to be honest with you. But listen, enough about that. Let's look forward. Let's talk about the repercussions of this for Mel Tucker. I think first and foremost, all of the goodwill that he lost after week one is it couldn't be more back. I think he doubled the amount of goodwill that he had coming into the beginning of this season after this game. I mean, just listening to us talk about it, it's obvious that the fans are going to be on his side. We're going to trust him. I mean, he's earned now many more cracks at this based on so many different factors. You really did a good job of laying out in terms of the trust and the credit and everything that he's displayed from a coaching acumen standpoint. I think the other interesting part of this, and maybe – in some ways, the bigger part is what it does for Mel Tucker on the recruiting trail, because he lost. I think that's his most important battleground, to be honest with you. Like, yeah, he wants to win games, no question. But ultimately, he wants to, you know, he wants to build his team in his image and shore up this roster the way that his Georgia rosters were shored up, you know, the way that he had done in his one recruiting class at Colorado. Like, he's looking to get talent. And this, I mean, what this does for him from an in-house recruiting standpoint or a in-state recruiting standpoint is massive. And it's already kind of paying dividends. I mean, just today, Michigan, you know, in-state recruit Rashawn Benny, who was seen for a very long time as a Michigan lean, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, Michigan State really trending well here. You know, guys like Andrell Anthony, who was a Michigan State. I mean, I think everybody was shocked when he wasn't a Michigan State commit, and he ended up flipping to Michigan, the wide receiver from East Lansing High. Ethan Boyd, current recruit's teammate. I think everybody was surprised by that. But now, what you've done by going out and doing that to Michigan is you have forced recruits' hands. They have to listen to you. He now has so much time. He has so much to sell. And honestly, Ricky White coming out and doing this as a freshman, enormous. Jalen Hunt and Deshaun Mallory showing out as freshmen, enormous because he's showing these kids that, hey, you can come in and I'm not going to keep you from playing if you can play. And that, I think, is as powerful as anything on the recruiting trail. So obviously a lot of things can still break other ways. There could still be some bad losses this year. But what that does from an in-state perspective, where it is critical, critical that Michigan State does well, is, you know, couldn't be more valuable.
Austin, I you hit it on the head, and they took that evening, Saturday night, and the MSU athletic department, you know, shout out to all of the awesome marketing and recruiting staff that they have. And in that 12 hours, they came up with a new campaign. Now, I don't know if you had a chance to see it. This said, but it was freshman play, come shine with us. And not just play, freshman win. Okay. And I don't know how you don't see that as a kid and say, damn, because it's not just freshman play, because that's what Mel was selling already. Okay. And you saw it with Jordan Simmons at running back. You saw it with Ricky White at wide receiver. The difference here is now he's saying, yeah, freshman play here and they win. And he's pushing that down everyone's throats. And it took one evening for there to be some, as you mentioned, rumblings of people thinking, hey, that sounds cool. I'd like that. That's not a bad thing. And so, you know, hats off to being quick and being nimble and turning a marketing campaign like that. And you're totally right. You know, the season's win total. This is a year where we get to, as we keep saying, have fun and enjoy watching this team grow. The other win total, as you mentioned, is gaining respect and top level talent on the recruiting trail. That's the other game to watch. And that's hopefully going to continue to be a joy here as the 2021 class is a probably 75% of the way there, maybe a little more, is who can Mel pick up on the way. And we'll take a hard look at next year when we get to next year. But yeah, a lot of momentum.
And it's not like this class or this, you know, I think the exciting part for fans too is the momentum is as important as anything, like you said. And it's not like there's a ton of upperclassmen on this roster right now. So not only are you hopefully generating interest that's going to bring in high level young talent right away, but you've got a lot of young talent on this team, I think, already. I think we've seen it, like you said, Simmons, Ricky White, two obvious examples on the offensive side of the ball. And I think there's a lot of other really great pieces here that are going to be here for at least another, I don't know, call it 1 or 2 years. So a lot of solid base for Mel to build on. John, with all that, do you think we should take a commercial break?
I'd love to.
So would I. Whew. Ready? I'm going to go for it. 3, 2, 1. And we're back. I probably don't need to do that every time anymore, but it's really just kind of fun now. So, Michigan State, not the only team that played this week. Nationally, John, we've got some good ones that went down.
Absolutely. And if you hear me periodically, just like start laughing, it's because I'm still, man, Michigan State went into the big house with no reason to win and 25 point dog. And they
won
and beat that ass. They beat that ass, Austin.
It's
and no
thing.
Excuses. No excuses. None. Nothing to say. Beat it. Beat that ass. All right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Reset.
Pull it together.
So Boston College headed to Clemson this past weekend as well. And while we normally wouldn't comment on a game like that, this was a problem for the Tigers. Trevor Lawrence, unable to play with his COVID-19 diagnosis. Hopefully he's able to recover soon. But Clemson in a world of hurt during this game. And in fact, had to have a furious comeback here to win 34-28. At one point, Boston College was ahead 28-10 and right before halftime. And you had the college football nation looking at the scoreboard, and you're seeing Michigan State up, you're seeing Boston College up, and everyone was like, what's going on here?
A very 2020 moment for people where it's like, this just can't get any weirder.
So to Clemson's credit, they clawed back because they just top to bottom are better. And frankly, DJ, and I'm going to say his name incorrectly, but their backup quarterback, DJ Ujalele. I believe that's how you say it.
I'm going Ugalele, but right. Yeah, I'm with you. I think we just call him DJ.
DJ, thank you. Yeah, me, notorious terrible name pronouncer. He came in and did more than fine, which should be unsurprising. But, you know, came in 30 for 41, 342 yards and two touchdowns. Not bad.
Yeah,
not
fine.
Bad for That's a backup.
Well, it was also at one point in time the number one. I don't know if it was number one overall recruit, but he was definitely the number one quarterback recruit in his class. And I remember when he committed, I think it was between Clemson and at the time Oregon. And I remember, and he's from Oregon. I remember that happening and just being like, okay, this might be the moment for Clemson, where it's like, you're going to go steal. And this was in Oregon, was hot too. I'm like, you're going to go and like developing Justin Herbert. I'm like, you're going to go steal the number one kid in the country away from, like, literally out of the backyard of his hometown, away from Phil Knight. Like, yeah, okay. You're a real deal. Like, this is now juggernaut status.
Yeah.
So yeah, not surprising that he had a nice debut.
Yeah. But to his credit, you know, like, that's a tough situation. This was a game that Clemson, frankly, was dominating. They were on the doorstep about to tie the game up, I believe, 14 all. And Boston College had a 97-yard fumble return for a touchdown to like flip the game on its head. I mean, they held Boston College 275 yards total. So it's not like there was the wheels didn't fall off. It was just one of those survive games, you know? Sure. And so I this doesn't really change my mind about Clemson at all. Even we'll talk about this week's matchup, which will be a test. But yeah, I think that the box score may have been a touch deceiving. But you know, no Trevor Lawrence, it's a problem. Texas can't seem to play it just a calm game. Texas ever. Texas went to Oklahoma State, ranked sixth in the nation, and won 41-34 in a game that they had no business winning. None. Zero.
The Big 12, I don't think, should be eligible for playoff spots ever, because I don't think it's a good thing for them. They clearly don't want it. I mean, no one in this conference wants to do the right thing and just be like, hey, guess what? We're actually good. They're never actually good. Even Oklahoma at their best is, I will give Baker Mayfield credit. He had that one great game where they just got beat in the Rose Bowl by Georgia, I think it was. And that was fun, but that's probably the most fun we've really had. Maybe they beat Bama one year, whatever. Does not matter. I am unfazed. I think Oklahoma has shown that basically, unless they're real deal, like Heisman quarterback level great, these teams are going to have no chance when they line up against a Bama or a good LSU or like an Ohio State, a Clemson. It's never going to happen. So I think we should just put it all to bed. I think Oklahoma State had their little fun thing, and you know, Texas did what Big 12 teams do to each other and just absolutely sabotaged their conference's run at a playoff spot. So it was very fittingly Big 12.
Incredible stuff. I mean, yeah, they 5 weeks in and they don't have a playoff contender and won't. Because if there is, it's
and they only played each other.
Yep. Yep. It's an incredible thing. And it just brings me back to the quote from Bill Bowlesby, who this is completely out of context because he was talking about playing amid a pandemic. But he said, nobody has told us it's poorly advised to do what we're doing. And I think about that quote all the time. when I see these Big 12 scores pop up and they're just beating the hell out of each other. And he's like, no one told us it was poorly advised to do this.
The SEC had the slogan of it just matters more.
Yeah.
I think that should be the Big 12's like forever slogan. No one told us this was ill advised. It's just a fact of the matter.
All right. So that takes us to the final game of the week, which was the Cincinnati Bearcats, now ranked number 6 in the country. Swallow that. Went and took on a Memphis team and beat them 49-10. Now, this is not a bad Memphis team. This was a 3-1 Memphis team. And Cincinnati's just that good. Now, again, yes, they are only playing conference opponents, but I have every reason to believe that they're probably going to go 9-1. You know, I don't know where they're going to slip up. Maybe they have the uh-oh game, but, you know, they have a game at maybe Central Florida that I would circle. But, I mean, these guys are – Luke Fickell's got a thing going.
So I think at this point we can all kind of – and especially after this week where we're all feeling, you know, generous and sunny and everything, we can officially move on from blaming Luke Fickell for for all that he's done against Michigan State. I think it's time. We accept. We say, hey –
we're good. Hey, well, everyone's happy.
We're fine, A, and B, like, okay, we get it. Like, you're hoping Ryan Day goes somewhere else or something happens and you can end up at Ohio State and that's the card you played, and that's fine. And if not, you're hoping you get called up to a Power 5 conference at some point. Either way, a fine gambit on his part. I can't say that I blame him.
This is, you're on Instagram, you can't help yourself, and you search an ex-girlfriend. And she is now married, and you say to yourself, that's great. And you mean it.
Yeah.
Like, you mean it because you are happy. Everyone's happy. Right. Luke, we're happy for you, man. Happy that's what you, I'll Luke. Say about that. All right. Big Ten results. A lot went down. We officially owe the University of Maryland, I don't want to say an apology, but certainly a pat on the back, because they went true team chaos. They went from losing by 40 to Northwestern to beating Minnesota 45-44 in overtime. I don't know if you had a chance to see this one, Austin.
But only the Ghosts, bits and pieces.
The Ghosts lost. This was a wild game, just off the bat. Ghosts down early, big. Ghosts come back up, big. Maryland comes back behind. I think we said last week that that we thought that maybe Maryland's quarterback was in name only, like he was a brand name. I don't know if Tua
Hydrox.
I don't know if Tua came and played for Maryland this week. Like, he may have slipped on the Maryland jersey because they played that. He played that well.
I would agree. I mean, that was a big deal for them. I think I just really I got to say, if we have to have them in the conference, which it appears as though we do, I love them as the chaos agent. Like, I think IU has graduated maybe, or they at least have the potential to. Maybe this week would officially do that. I think the win against Penn State kind of did it. I think they've graduated from chaos agent to actually, like, they might do something maybe a little. And Maryland is the true, like, okay, this isn't a good team, but, you know, they could do some things like this. Like, who knows what could happen? That's kind of how I like that. If that's their role, that's fine. I don't know that I'm okay with them ever actually being good. And I don't really want them to be this horrible, horrible team just because, like, hey, you're in the conference. We've got one of those already. I probably shouldn't say anything about Rutgers after 2 weeks ago, but still, I'm always going to. I don't know. I kind of like this role, and I think it just only playing teams in your own conference is making this whole thing so weird. Cause when we look ahead to the, like, you know, next week's games, like, I don't know what to think. Like, I don't know who's good. Like, is Minnesota good? Like, or no, is Minnesota, I guess, no, they're not good. We know that, but are they that bad?
No. You know,
is Northwestern, like, they beat Iowa. Are they that good that they beat Maryland by, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think these questions are really interesting in a conference only situation.
Austin, the beautiful thing about this year is that all of the shine is taken off of everybody. There's no makeup for anybody. And that exposes the fact that we've been trying to beat into the nation's head for as long as we've been doing this podcast, that nobody is good. None. Okay? And this is just proof. Like, Minnesota, not good. And then you're like, okay, but maybe they're not that bad. It's like, it doesn't matter. They're just not good. Northwestern.
That is irrelevant.
Yeah, Northwestern. Oh, they're 2-0. They beat Iowa 21-20. Is Northwestern good? No. No, they're not good. We happen to be better than Iowa that day, who also is not good. Like, that's just what it is.
Right.
So, huge fan of everyone realizing that everyone's not good, with the exception, obviously, of a handful of teams. But I mentioned Northwestern, who took down Iowa 21-20, starting the game down 14-0 right off the bat. Kind of thought they might fold because of that 3-9 team last year, but I don't know. I can never know what to make of a Pat Fitzgerald team, but this was maybe more telling for Iowa, which we'll get into in a little bit. But what do you think of Iowa kind of blowing this one?
Big red flags for Iowa. I mean, Iowa is in a position, like, mentally as a team, that I'm not sure how they're going to bounce back. I actually think, and we'll obviously talk about our game more in depth, I think this week's game for Iowa is a huge test, because, like, their hopes are over. I mean, they're 0-2. They're not going to do anything this year. But, like, whether this is going to be just bad or a complete disaster is really kind of all on the line this week. Because in an 8-game season, really, even in a normal season, you don't go 0-3 and not bounce back or recover. Like, just doesn't really happen. Northwestern kind of did it last year in a weird way. But, I just don't know. I am impressed by Northwestern. I'm in terms of their I think Pat Fitzgerald's a good coach. They finally made the change on offensive coordinator. And I think through two games, even though they only scored two, you know, they didn't have an impressive offensive performance this week. But I still think you're seeing major dividends pay off there. But this one, to me, I think says more about potentially Iowa than it does Northwestern. Because, like, Peyton Ramsey is going to – he had the most Peyton Ramsey line ever. I think he was slightly over 50% completion percentage – and had 150 something yards passing, and I want to say a pick. So, like, that's what you're gonna get. So I think with Northwestern, it's like, this is kind of the ceiling. Like, I'm just not sure it's gonna get better from here.
Yeah, and that's not even a knock. Like, that's what you are, and that's okay. You're just not good, and so I think that's fine. Then, you know, the other games that happen in the West, Purdue took out Illinois 31-24. Purdue 2-0. They can feel really, really good about that. Like, that is something they should legitimately be happy about. I don't know if they finish with a winning record. It's just what it is. You know, Illinois, meanwhile, is exactly maybe what everyone thought they were in a program sense, in that 6-6 in a traditional year. That's probably the ceiling. Like, I don't see.
But I feel like that's just where Illinois football is. Like,
that's
that's just where you are, and that's fine. This wasn't going to be the year that they were ever going to break through that.
Right. And you know, I think they can compete with the third tier, whereas in years past they were just so far below.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But and proof is this, you know, losing to Purdue 31-24, right? But they're just I don't see a lot of room for huge improvement for that program. Purdue, meanwhile, they have a lot of things going for them.
So yeah, I think Purdue could come out of that feeling okay. And I actually want to talk about them a little bit more when we talk about next week's game. But final game here was what, Ohio State, Penn State? I'm not even gonna, I don't think we need to spend much time on this. I think it's very straightforward. Ohio State is one of the three best teams in the country. Penn State, until they get a quarterback the caliber of Justin Fields, it does not matter the level of talent that you have around you. You are just, as much as they want to be the second team, you're just not going to do it until you get real quarterback talent. And like, I give Sean Clifford credit. He's a good quarterback. He's enough to win you 10, 11 games, especially with the talent he has around him. I mean, I think you saw some flash talent from Penn State that was really impressive, but they're not as well coached as Ohio State. And they're just, you're not that supernova level of talent. End of story. The stat you wrote down here, John, Ohio State, they're in the playoff. Like, it's over. Fields has 7 incompletions in 2 games.
Yep.
Like, that's insane.
They're just dealing, man. They're a machine right now. And the final game that didn't happen, Wisconsin-Nebraska was canceled because of the outbreak of COVID-19 cases within the Wisconsin football and athletic department. Unknown if they're going to even play this week. But I think the important takeaway from this one, you know, obviously is hopefully everyone is safe and can get back to playing a full Big Ten schedule. But don't let that distract you from the fact that Michigan State went into the Big House and won 27-24 this past weekend. Just don't want anyone to forget that happened because.
No, that's a really good point. Probably the best point you could have made.
People forget. Notable upcoming games, we'll blast through these. Clemson, number 1 in the nation, heads to play at Notre Dame, number 4 in the nation. No Trevor Lawrence again, but is Notre Dame really the number 4 team in the nation? And if they are, does it matter? Because there's so much of a gap between the 3 teams you'd said.
No, it doesn't matter. Okay. Number 4 is, it doesn't. Like, number 4 is going to be a distant number 4 in this. I mean, number 4 has routinely been just, okay, who gets slaughtered by Bama, and I don't see that being any different this year.
BYU heads to play at Boise State, a couple of ranked teams matching up. There are actual playoff implications here, because as you mentioned, the 4th team is wide open for that playoff, and these teams, whoever wins this, probably might go undefeated, so they'll have a case.
I mean, BYU has the most, you know, strange twist of fate. They have the most Boise State way of getting into the playoff. You know, Boise State always made it into the BCS because of, you know, who they are, and then they'd always sweep their way through the Mountain West. BYU's got a chance to do the same. Especially if they win this game, I think they have a very real chance because they're crushing teams.
Yep.
I don't know who their best win even is. It's probably like Houston, who isn't good.
Yep.
But their quarterback, Zach Wilson, is real nice. He's got 19 touchdowns, 2 picks, over 2,100 yards. He's looking like a first-round pick. So if they win this week and he has another big game, I think you hear real Heisman buzz around him. And I think because of that, you get real playoff buzz around BYU.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what year Zach Wilson is.
I think he's a junior.
So he's got to be going pro. Has he done his mission trip? Do you have to do that?
Think you have to do that. I don't think he's like 27 years old. I'm pretty sure he's like a normal age kid.
I know, so. But I think you like have to do that. Anyway, maybe he can do it in the city that he's drafted by. But you said, I think last week, you know, the 1-2 punch of Fields and Lawrence in whatever order for number 1 and 2 and overall pick is so freaking sexy. Whoever picks this kid up, that's fun. Like, that's a nice.
Hey, man, I think this year's quarterback class could be really, really good. Quick thing. I think that everything that's going on, my theory that Justin Fields is going to end up going number 1 or get picked above Trevor Lawrence, it's gaining steam. Not that I'm seeing it anywhere, but I just feel like if he keeps going out and doing these things and Lawrence is out for a stretch, and maybe if DJ Uiagalelei comes in and is really, really good, like you start getting like the system quarterback talk, like they used to throw out there about Tom Brady and all that, you know what I mean? Like I think there's going to be some real legs to Justin Fields ending up as the number 1 pick, but that's for another day.
All right. Number 8, Georgia heads to number 5, Florida for the socially distanced cocktail party. This is a fun game, but frankly, does it matter? No, because like we talked about, the separation between these teams and the top three might just be too big.
Yeah, I mean, this is the prequel to who gets smoked by Bama in the playoff. It's who gets smoked by Bama in the SEC championship game, especially this year. I just don't think either of these teams have much that's going to give them trouble. They're just not that dynamic. I think in the past you've had some real dynamism with these teams, especially offensively. And like, it's funny because it probably should be Florida. Like, they've got a pretty talented team. Kyle Pitts is a star. I mean, I like Kyle Trask is another good player, but like, yeah, I don't know. I just don't really buy it yet.
All right, let's take a walk through the Big Ten upcoming this week. Nebraska heads to Northwestern. Okay, so we're going to learn a lot about Nebraska, I think, in this game, in that we learned nothing in week one against Ohio State. This is a great barometer for me on where you're at as a program.
Absolutely. I think this one, to me, like, is very interesting about Nebraska. I think this is kind of a big statement game for both of them. Because, like, to me, this, if you're Northwestern, to me, this game is a big one. If you can go and beat, or if you can hold up against Nebraska at home, you're 3-0 and looking like maybe some type of a competitor over there. I mean, I don't know who the best team is in the West right now. Like, Wisconsin's, how many games are they going to play? Are they going to have a quarterback? Like, there's a lot of that division is, speaking of getting slaughtered in championship games, the sacrificial Ohio State lamb is very up for grabs.
Let's see. Maryland heads to Penn State. This one, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Penn State opened as a 25-point favorite in this one. But, hey, as we know, 25-point favorites often lose, as we saw this past Saturday when Michigan State went into the Big 12 and beat Michigan 27-24, in case you forgot. So
yeah, no, that did happen. This is a perfect chaos agent type of game. I don't think they're going to win, but I think they'll cover. Or they'll lose by like 55. I mean, that's just the thing. I have no idea what to expect from Maryland. I kind of love it.
Yeah, that's pretty great. Minnesota travels to Illinois. I think you said it best. The eyebrows will be raised for the loser. And the winner, meh.
Right. I don't know that this – because if Minnesota goes in and wins, it's just like, okay, here's your get-right game. You know, hey, let's maybe not forget about those first two. But, you know, you bounce back the way that you should. Illinois, kind of the same – Illinois maybe less so. I think if Illinois beats Minnesota, that's a big red flag for PJ Fleck. Like, I don't know that they're necessarily starting to talk about running him out of town, but like, that's not going to happen. But like, people, I think you at least, the conversation isn't as rosy. Certainly the goodwill is really probably evaporating pretty quickly. I don't think Lovey's going anywhere, so I think maybe it's less consequential for Illinois.
Absolutely. Let's see. The Michigan travels to Indiana. Indiana hasn't beat Michigan since 1987. Michigan opens as a 3-point favorite by brand name alone. I don't know. What do you think, Austin?
My thought process here is that if – based on what I saw in Michigan, again, it's not a talent thing. This is strictly a scheme thing. If Indiana's not going to do it this year, I don't know when you're going to beat Michigan, because they've got the personnel to have an explosive offense. You've got the quarterback that can keep that defense on its toes. You've got deep threats. You've got a decent running game. Like, this is the year for you to go and do it. And Michigan's offense is a big time work in progress. And Indiana's defense is not bad. I mean, that's one of the better kept secrets in the Big Ten the last handful of years. Indiana's defense is not only not bad, but sometimes it's downright good. And so I think this is the year for IU. I mean, if you want to jump from chaos team to actual team, this is your time is now, Indiana.
Yeah, man, this is it. I mean, will be the boy who cried wolf if you don't pull it off here. And finally,
and guess what? If they pull this one off, you're talking about potentially setting up like a, as crazy as it sounds, the opportunity to play Ohio State for a chance to go to the Big Ten championship game.
I mean, that game all of a sudden becomes the single biggest game on the schedule for Ohio State. And that
100%.
includes a closing game against Michigan.
Like, absolutely. Definitely the game of most consequence. Like there's, and that's not hyperbole. That's not trolling. That's just the honest, that's the honest truth.
Absolutely. Yeah. Indiana. See, most of the computers are saying that, you know, this is about a 50-50 shot terms of about who can win. The problem for Indiana is they not only have to play Ohio State, they have to play at Wisconsin too a little later this year, but one problem at a time.
And it's for the division. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the division.
Exactly. Our upset alert game, Purdue traveling to Wisconsin. If this game is played, the OAP is because Purdue is learning how to win. Wisconsin needs to have a quarterback, which they won't have if this game is played, even if as we, you know, they are able to clear enough protocol team-wise. They will be playing their fourth-string quarterback in this game.
Not Demetri Trice, not Brad Davison.
Not Brad Davison, who we both floated on Twitter as options. Don't know if you knew this, listeners, but they both played quarterback in high school. Davison in Minnesota, Trice in Ohio. Trice actually went to back-to-back Ohio 1A state championship games as the quarterback.
That's wild to me that he like didn't, and I don't know, maybe he did, but like to not really get looks.
Too little.
That's Ohio. Yeah, like it's Ohio. I don't know. I would have thought somebody would have given him a try.
I'm with you, but you know, he was kind of hoops from day one. I think I don't know if that was the
case. It worked out. He's pretty damn good.
He's okay. Yeah, always a soft spot in our heart for any Trice. And then, you know, Rutgers finishes it out at Ohio State. This is a improve week to week game for Rutgers. I think they took, while they lost Indiana 37-21 last week, I think they can be okay with that. This is a don't, if they can cover the 40-point spread.
40-point spread. Whoa.
And you know what's wild is that spread's probably fair. And this is not the Rutgers of last year. Like, this
it's
is
not it's not a statement about Rutgers. It's a statement about Ohio State. I mean, that team's just bonkers. And I think, okay, one thing on Ohio State. It's really unfair that their coaches are so good because Chris Olave, like this was something that struck me. Chris Olave is, I think Garrett Wilson's their best receiver, but Chris Olave is pretty damn good. Kid was a 3-star recruit.
Yeah,
I think that is the ultimate case in point of what we were talking about earlier, where it's not the stars. I mean, they get the stars, but they develop the players. And I think that's the part that's so, like, I don't know, seemingly just unfair. Like, they shouldn't be allowed to do that, I don't think. Like, Michigan State should. I don't think Ohio State should.
I know. You guys don't get to have 3 stars come in and be NFL prospects. Like,
yeah, no.
Come on. That's an embarrassment of riches. Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah.
So what's next, Austin?
Let's preview Iowa. Let's just dive right in. We can say what we want. I think we'll kind of like meld our things together today in the spirit of time here, because I know you're a new dad.
Okay, I appreciate it. So let's break it down for everyone. As of today, Iowa, a 9-point favorite in an 11 a.m. noon Eastern kick on ESPN. Iowa 0-2. That record is a little uglier than maybe that represents the team. What do you think?
So I think this is a weird Iowa team. To be honest with you, in watching a little bit of them and certainly reading through these box scores, it's not what you'd expect. I mean, I think the first thing that jumps out is that they maybe don't deserve to be 0-2, but they certainly don't deserve to be a lot. I mean, 1-1, I would say at best. And I think the weirdest thing about them is their profile is so strange to me. I mean, if you look at their quarterback's name, Spencer Petras, he's a sophomore. First of all, he looks like an NFL quarterback, 6'5", 230, and he's a 4-star recruit from California. I mean, that alone is like the weirdest part to me of this whole team. I think another thing is just like their offensive profile. Petras has thrown the ball almost 90 times through 2 games. When in the world has that – that's got – I mean, no joke. I would not be surprised if that is a Iowa record through two games of passes attempted. Like I was shocked to see his statistics. So that to me says that they are having a bit of a crisis of confidence, if you will, because it's not like Petras is going out there and tearing it up. He's completed just over 50% of his passes.
Right.
He hasn't even thrown for 500 yards in two games. Where you're throwing the ball 45 times a game, you'd maybe expect that, but he hasn't. Only one touchdown, three picks all last week against Northwestern. I mean, to me, this is a team that maybe is getting away from its identity, potentially because of a surprising lack of call it production, maybe not talent, but production on the offensive line. I mean, if you know one thing about Iowa football, it's that they churn out just like Wisconsin does, big ass, talented NFL caliber, specifically offensive linemen. And they've got good kids on this line. I mean, Alaric Jackson is a kid from Detroit, who's a highly rated NFL recruit, but they haven't been the typical Iowa on the ground so far. I mean, they don't have a 100-yard rusher through two games, which I know sounds crazy, but like for Iowa, you would kind of expect that. They haven't put up more than, they've scored 20 points in both of their losses. And they're just not doing a ton that you would expect an Iowa team to do offensively. So I think Michigan State really just has to come in and execute, in my opinion, defensively, the way that they did last week. And if they can control the line, which they really honestly did against the Michigan team that, yes, is starting a lot of new offensive linemen, but I think is probably comparable, I would say at this point, to this Iowa line. If they can come in and kind of control that a little bit, they're going to have a chance to slow this Iowa team down. If they can, honestly, I think the thing is you kind of want to force them to do what they've been doing all season, and that's to make their quarterback throw the ball. And the fact that they have this seeming preference to doing that really, I think, has played into their opponent's hands thus far.
Yeah, Iowa's offense has been putrid to date. They've averaged 20 points a game. That's 88th in the nation, and that's not with 120 teams. That's out of 102 teams. So that's just pretty bad. Total offense, 71st in the nation. Rushing offense, 69th in the nation. And as you mentioned, despite how many times they've thrown the ball, 48th in the country in passing offense. Like that is not good and will not get it done. That said, when you play Purdue and Northwestern, those are teams that are not good either. You'd expect Iowa to win at least one of those. They are in a very much in a DEFCON one situation in Iowa City. We talked about the distractions that they have at their program right now, the lawsuit that's pending over Kirk Ferentz, who frankly might be the biggest grifter in America that no one talks about.
I agree.
That dude has made more money off of the poor backs of Iowa taxpayers and donors, but they did it to themselves. But you know, they Kirk Ferentz, he has seen his swan song ended in with L.J. Scott's "Stretch My Hand, Father, Stretch Your Hands." that was it.
Yeah, I think that's just it. I mean, I thought, you know, I was a very vocal, frisky Iowa defender a year ago. They did go 10-3, won their bowl game. But when we talk about games of real consequence, it's hard for me to see them getting back to that mountaintop. Certainly not this year, but moving forward until you can figure out and get back to being who you are, which those great Iowa teams never seem to have a problem doing. And I will be interested, I will say, this week to see if they change that mentality now that their leading receiver, I'm going to screw this name up. His last name is Smith Marset. I can get there.
Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, so Smith Marset is out. He's their leading receiver through two games. He was arrested for an operating while intoxicated after the game last week. Did not take the loss well. He checks in at 92 career receptions, over 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns in under 40 games. So he's got seven catches for 84 yards so far this season. He was last year's Big Ten Return Specialist of the Year. He even runs the ball a little bit for them. So to say that they're missing out on a big weapon is potentially understating things. I wonder if that ends up working in their favor, because maybe they go back to being more of the Iowa that they are, that they've always supposed to have been, just because of a lack of your top receiver. But
I think
that'll be interesting.
Buddy, I welcome that, because we saw the jump that Michigan State's front seven made. Antoine Simmons was just Steph Curry in the zone. Like, he was truly, that is what in the zone looks like as a defender. And he has his complementary parts on the D-line, who were putting pressure on the quarterback without an intense amount of blitzing, was eye-opening to me, based on what we had seen. So, if Iowa wants to go, you know, toe-to-toe in the trenches, I would have not felt great about it 2 weeks ago. But after last week's product, I would say good luck.
I think that, again, that young defensive line rotation with Hunt, with Mallory, I mean, both of them made plays. I think Mallory had the only sack of the game. And then honestly, like, you know, Slate, who deserves credit that I never give him credit, but he is just a big ugly that eats up double teams, and he looks way bigger than a year ago when he was playing as a true freshman. So, you know, all of those things considered, Michigan State stacks up on that D line a lot better than I think anybody would have reasonably expected. And so, you know, I think when you look at MSU's, what they need to do offensively in this game, again, I'm not sure that Iowa brings anything crazy from a defensive standpoint. I mean, they run kind of a very similar, honestly, at least formation-wise, defense to Michigan State. It's a 4-2-5 with a what they call a cash linebacker instead of a jack that MSU uses. So, you know, it's a look that Michigan State's used to playing against. I think that's probably a benefit for them. But I think the tests this week will be a little bit different. MSU's going to have to run the ball a little better. They're going to have to still control that time of possession and not turn the ball over. But Rocky's going to have to play a different game. I don't think you're going to see many defenses, especially after what happened last week, be willing to go and play that super aggressive press man coverage. First of all, a lot of teams don't do that anyway. So Rocky's just going to have to be able to make some tougher reads and probably some more intermediate style throws that require a little bit more touch, which I thought his deep ball touch last week was unbelievable. He put some beauties out there for Ricky White to finish off, but he's going to have to, you know, complete some of those shorter passes, complete some of those timing routes, which I thought he in his opportunities did a great job of last week. It's just going to be a little bit different ask. Offensively positioned for weapon wise, I think they'll try to get Jaden Reed back involved. You saw him try to do it late in last week's game. And also they're probably without Matt Dotson, who it didn't really get mentioned on the broadcast, but he had a nasty looking fall on the sideline. And we know he's coming off of that Achilles injury. I just wonder how aggressive MSU's training staff is going to be bringing a guy like that back. So I think, and you saw it towards the end of the game, the Burghorst-Gillis in combination, I think it'll be very interesting to see how much they go to them. So this is yet another big opportunity for Trenton Gillison to get involved. But listen, if MSU can control the lines the way they did last week, they got a very real chance to win this game.
Yeah. On top of that, I think you start to see Connor Hayward become even a bigger factor on this offense. We saw last week, Connor had the best game of his career. And we couldn't be more happy for our biggest and largest son. BBB really rose to the occasion, not just as a pass blocker, but he started to create his runs that they were giving him. Now, granted, in the first game, they weren't giving him a lot of opportunity to succeed. But this time running between the tackles, you started to see him stop trying to be shifty and just be you. Just be you, dude. You're the biggest back that any linebacker is going to have to tackle this year. Just be you. Don't get light on your feet. Just bully people. And you started to see him become a little bit of a bully and stop looking for the home run and just start to look for 3 yards. That's okay. Because when Connor is in, they have to give him carries like that to keep defense honest. Because if he's in and they're, it's almost a tip off that they're passing every play. Right. Yep. So you have to, he has to have those dives, but now he's being a little more productive with them. You mentioned Matt Dotson potentially being out. That opens things up quite a bit as well, because Iowa, like you mentioned, is not going to play press. They're going to try and keep things in front of them a little bit. Where does Connor Hayward play in that offense, especially if a tight end position is unproven at best? I mean, that's just something I think I'm going to be keeping an eye out for.
Yeah, I think, again, the balance between Jordan Simmons and Connor, and, you know, you have to wonder, when does Eli Collins get a real look here? Because the fact that he's still not playing, him and Julian Barnett both didn't really see any action last week. I think that's something we should keep an eye on here moving forward as well, because, you know, they're going to have – the carries are going to go around. I think this is going to be an ugly game. I think this is going to be a very I would call it a low-scoring affair, I suppose. And the tougher team is going to win. I think for MSU, just to put a bow on it here, MSU's got an opportunity to really ride this momentum and turn this season into a really pleasant surprise. Iowa is out here to try and save their season. I mean, make no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's saving season time for Iowa. Whereas MSU, I think, really has a chance to ride some real momentum down the stretch here and create some real positive juju for this team. So I think MSU's got a real chance. If I'm a betting man, I would pick them to cover. I think +9 is a lot of points, especially with the way Iowa's looked. But we'll see. And I think, again, just as a last thought here, this is, I think, it's not irresponsible to say that this is a bigger test for Mel Tucker and his staff than the Michigan game, because you got to manage emotions now. You came off the low and got high. Now you got to come off the high and not go back low. So I think if you see a team come out and play really disciplined, solid football again, like they did last week, I mean, you should be over the moon about the possibilities of this Mel Tucker 10 years Michigan State head coach.
You're right. This is one of those fun games, because I was staring at 0-3 in the face. They need this more than anyone. Michigan State is playing with house money. Okay. They were supposed to lose this game before the season started. They're supposed to lose this game now, right?
Yep.
You're playing with house money. You just this is the fun part, watching this team grow up. You mentioned this is going to be a low-scoring game. This is the over-under in this one is the lowest for a Power 5 game in the country.
As it should be.
47 total points is the over-under on this one. So, settle in. And I'm going to give one final shout-out, because in case you forgot, Michigan State did beat Michigan 27-24 last week.
And yep. No, good point.
Part of the reason why, Austin, is because of Michigan State's punting. And I don't say that
indeed.
I don't say that as a joke. That is going to be as important in this game as any other. Bryce Berenger bursting onto the scene, a long of a 78-yard punt in this game. First of all, let's just sleep with that, with our arms wrapped around
incredible.
That. He averaged 54 yards a punt this in the biggest game of his career, which is, I believe, like 16 yards or so better than his averages last year. Like, that is a market improvement.
Listen, if there's one podcast that's going to give people credit for good punting, it's this one. I'm a big Bryce Berenger fan. I was thrilled with what we saw from a punting perspective this week.
Hey, man. That's the thing to keep an eye on here, because there's not going to be a lot of give in this game. So let's have a great Saturday. Lay in the bask of the Michigan State 27, Michigan 24 win. And while they were 25-point underdogs, Austin, it's not an upset anymore, man.
Nope.
I mean, you win 9 of the last, what is it? Is it 9 of the last 13?
13? Yeah, sure is. Now? I mean – Where's the threat, as they
say?
Oh,
no.
they had to get one. I had to get one in. But yeah, I mean, let's enjoy and bask in the glow. Like you said, that was incredibly fun and a really welcome surprise. And, you know, I think going to this game with rose colored glasses, hope they can do it again and, you know, enjoy the ride this year, because again, it's, you don't get many like this one. So let's have a little fun.
Hey, we'll see you on the Twitter, and, but let's just keep good vibes, man. Good vibes.
Good vibes, John. Importantly,
I'll let you know if I have another kid. I'll let you know if I have another kid, though.
Please do. I think that's, you know, listen, if you can.
As a courtesy.
Just for the rest of us, not necessarily for you. But yes, congratulations again. In all honesty, congratulations on becoming a father and your child being 1-0. I think that's an incredibly impressive record.
Congratulations to you, Austin, and to you, listeners. You get to walk the streets and talk that shit for another year. Let's keep
365 more days, baby. Let's keep it rolling. I love it. All right, guys. Thanks as always for sticking with us. This was a fun one. For John, this has been Austin, and we'll catch you guys next week.
See ya.